Hello and welcome to Euractiv's Tech Brief podcast. My name is Eliza Grizzi. I am your technology editor here at Euractiv. And this week we are looking at an ambitious manifesto on competition policy that was co-authored by the Open Markets Institute and a coalition of other civil society organizations. We are joined together by Max von Thun, the Europe Director of the Open Markets Institute, to discuss the manifesto and what competition policy could look like in the next few years. If you want an overview on all things tech in the EU, sign up to our free newsletter or visit the website euractiv.com. This is Euractiv's Tech Brief podcast. So your manifesto caught my attention running around social media the past couple of days. And it was very interesting to me because we've seen quite the regulatory barrage from the Commission on competition with investigations and enforcement actions, both on the Digital Markets Act and the Digital Services Act. But it seems to me that you think that what we have right now and what we've seen in the last few weeks is not enough. Is that true? And why?
So you're right that we're at a moment where the Commission has its hands full enforcing a lot of big new pieces of tech legislation, especially from our perspective, the Digital Markets Act. And we are asking for more, but I would say what we're asking for more in is less actually for new big flagship pieces of legislation, because I think we do need to leave some time for things like the DMA to be enforced. But what we want is for existing tools, especially competition policy, to be enforced in a different and bolder way. Because from our perspective, a lot of the issues that we see in tech, not just competition issues, but issues around disinformation, privacy, and so on, are ultimately a result of the scale of the dominant platforms that we see in this space. And we think that the competition tools that the European Commission has to hand could be used even more aggressively and imaginatively than they are being right now. And so really that's what we're putting forward in our manifesto.
So could you walk us through some of the specifics of what that could look like?
Sure. So in broad terms, what we're calling for is for anti-monopoly and policies to tackle concentration to be at the center of the next European Commission's agenda. Mm-hmm. So at the moment, DG Comp is pretty much the only DG that looks into these issues, and they do a good job. But there's a lot more that different parts of the Commission could be doing to address this issue of concentration in our economy, not just in tech, but actually in a lot of sectors where we see a few companies dominating. So we should be looking at how we can use things like industrial policy, data protection, consumer protection, tax policy to create a more balanced and decentralized economy. And that's kind of looking at things from a big picture. But we go into more detail in our manifesto of what that could look like. We have 18 recommendations, so I might not go through them all in one go, but I pick out a couple of priorities that we really emphasize in the manifesto. So one of them is that we think competition policy should not just look at how monopolies hurt consumers, which is an important part of monopoly power, but we also think that the Commission should look at how big tech and other monopolies can also harm workers, can harm small businesses, can undermine our privacy, can make our economy less resilient as well when we concentrate all that power in a few firms. We call for a more holistic approach in the Commission, where not just DG Comp, but other DGs, including trade, including grow, including bodies like the European Data Protection Supervisor, all work together to deal with this issue of concentration, and they collaborate more on cases. In terms of practical tools, something that we'd really like to see is a new power for the European Commission to investigate competition problems in entire industries. This was actually something that the Commission looked into before, called a new competition tool, because at the moment the Commission can investigate individual companies and they can punish them if they do bad things, but they can't look at a whole sector. In the tech context, for example, they can't look at the cloud market or AI foundation models and take action there. So we would want the Commission to have powers to actually intervene in wider markets. And then I think what I'd pick out, you know, in addition to that, is we think civil society organizations, including Open Markets, but lots of others, including consumer bodies and other NGOs, should play a much bigger role in competition enforcement. I think at the moment, competition enforcement is quite a siloed and technocratic bubble. where you do have outside involvement, it's mostly a small number of consultancies and law firms and economists. And we think that there's a lot of expertise and a lot of ideas out there in civil society, and that if the commission drew on that, they could really do more than they're doing right now. So that's a little bit of a flavor of what we call for in the manifesto.
I would like to pick out one of the things you mentioned about DG Comp. And you are in the manifesto proposing essentially some structural adjustments or some sort of internal process adjustments. How tenable do you think that is?
I would say on a practical level, what we're suggesting is actually very doable. I mean, what we're really just saying is that the people in DG Comp should have more conversations with their counterparts in other DGs and in other EU agencies. And so, for example, when they're investigating a merger, and that would allow, let's say, a big tech company to acquire a startup with some sensitive data, that they should go and talk to their counterparts, for example, in the European Data Protection Supervisor, in the national data protection authorities, and say, you know, hey, are there some privacy issues with us, with this company acquiring this data? And if so, how can we work together to deal with those? And you could apply that to lots of different areas. You know, when we're talking about, for example, industrial policy, which is really back in fashion now, if, you know, the commission or member states are giving subsidies to companies, DG Comp could say, they do this to an extent with the state aid regime, but they could say, are these subsidies helping to create a more competitive market, or are they just basically making the bigger companies bigger? So really what we're talking about is more collaboration, more information sharing. And that's something you could do kind of immediately. And in many cases, you wouldn't even need more resources to do that. So it's practical in that sense. Where I think we might see some barriers is that you would need to change the culture of how the commission works. Because as I said, ultimately, at the moment, it works in quite a siloed way. And I think you would have to get officials, for example, used to working in that way, which not all of them might like. I think often you have DGs being a little bit territorial about which issues they cover. And so you would need that change of culture. And to my mind, that would really need to come from the top. I think you would need to have political will from the commission president, from the commissioners to really make that happen. I don't think it would necessarily come about organically through officials by themselves.
That's really interesting. Do you think there is an appetite for that kind of cultural change?
I think there is. I think just in my conversation with officials in the commission, but also MEPs in the parliament and kind of actors in civil society and experts who follow these issues, I think a lot of people realize that the commission could be more effective if it worked in a more kind of holistic and collaborative way. From a competition perspective, I also think there are interesting models that the commission could draw from in other places. So to take the US, for example, under President Biden, Biden issued an executive order on competition, which basically ordered every US government department and agency to think about competition policy. So there's an interesting model there for the EU. But even closer to home, for example, in the Netherlands, there is a regulatory forum with which the Dutch Competition Authority and the Financial Regulator and the Privacy Authority all collaborate in this through this formal structure, work together on cases. So, you know, I think there are models that we could very much build on Europe. And I do think a lot of people are supportive of this happening.
When you say people, you mean average people or people in the commission?
I think more probably people in who are having the type of discussions that we're having. I'm not sure how much the kind of everyday citizen thinks about the benefits of regulatory collaboration. Although I think if you explain to them in the way I'm doing now, I think a lot of people would support it as well, people in the general sense as well.
Mm-hmm. I guess there is room for that, given that the elections are coming. And my question on that would be, do you have sort of particular hope around the elections that they could be a tipping point for competition policy?
Absolutely. I think like many organizations putting out manifestos at the moment, we see the European elections and the appointment of a new European Commission after that as a critical inflection point in terms of what the European institutions do and specifically what the next European Commission will pursue in terms of policies and wider objectives. And so we saw this as a critical moment to get this document out, to get our ideas into the minds of officials at DG Comp and other places. I think for competition policy in particular, it's a very significant moment because the expectation is that Margrethe Vestager, the competition commissioner, is not going to be seeking a third term. And so we're going to be seeing, in all likeliness, a new competition commissioner after very many years. And that's always a moment where there's some reflection about the role of a DG, about what kind of priorities it should be pursuing. And so we'd really like our ideas to be kind of on their desk as they start their job on day one.
Moving on a little bit, one of the things that you mentioned and also caught my eye in the manifesto was the connection between data policy and competition policy. Data is the new oil, data is the basis of economic power, data is this and data is that. We've all heard all of these big statements. Do you think right now we have the right pieces of legislation, directives, guidelines, et cetera, to align data and competition policy, or do we need something else?
Firstly, just to say, I strongly agree with you about the importance of data. I think that was true in technology already, but if you look at the latest developments in generative AI and large language models, the hunger for data among these big tech companies and just the sheer amount of data that's now being used to train these models is on a level that we haven't seen before. And so it makes these questions about data privacy, about competition, even more urgent than before. So as you say in our manifesto, one of our main recommendations is that there needs to be more alignment at the EU level between competition and privacy enforcement. Whether we'd need new legislation there or not, I think I would go back to my answer earlier about kind of collaboration between DGs. I think ultimately, this is more a question of a change of culture and getting, in this case, the competition authority, you know, DG Comp at the EU level, and the European Data Protection Supervisor, the Data Protection Board, more used to working with each other on cases. And I think that goes both ways. So I talked about this a little bit earlier, but for example, from the competition perspective, if DG Comp is looking at a merger where data is being acquired, they should be consulting their counterparts on data protection. But vice versa, privacy data protection authorities, both at the EU level, but also at the national level, should be thinking about how companies can use the data that they have and potentially violate data protection law in a way that strengthens their dominance. So, for example, we're hearing lots of evidence of privacy law being violated in terms of the training of large language AI models. So I think there we need to be looking at how privacy interacts with competition. There's a very interesting case that some of the listeners may be familiar with, which happened in Germany recently, where the German competition authority tried to use a violation of privacy law as evidence of a dominant company abusing its market power. That case ended up going all the way to the European Court of Justice, which ruled in the German competition authority's favor. So it said that actually, yes, violations of privacy law can also be an evidence of a monopolistic abuse by a dominant company. So I think there's movement in that direction, and we may need to have more tests in the courts to get us here. But I think really it's more about changing the culture of collaboration rather than having to pass a whole new load of legislation.
Another thing you recommended in the manifesto, and it's sort of on the topic of big tech, which was what you were just talking about, but we've been talking about this whole time, is bright line rules. Can you tell us a little bit about what those look like and what is the Commission's willingness and ability to enforce such rules, given that many of these big tech companies are actually housed and headquartered in the US?
Sure. So when we talk about bright line rules, what we're talking about is very clear, unambiguous rules that apply to dominant companies and that essentially say, you are not allowed to engage in a certain practice because we consider that abusive or anti-competitive. So that could be, promoting your own product over those of competitors. It could be stealing data from companies that are your customers and using it to copycat their products. It could be charging unfairly high fees to your customers. It could be a whole range of things. But what we're saying is that, yeah, you should have these rules and you just have to comply with them. Because I think one of the issues that we've seen a lot with competition enforcement is there's a kind of negotiation between regulators and companies over whether something is allowed or not. And the companies will submit all kinds of evidence to say that actually their behavior isn't anti-competitive, and they'll commission expensive studies and so on. And that delays enforcement against these kinds of bad behaviors. So in the tech sector, actually, we already have a piece of regulation which essentially imposes bright line rules on companies, and that's the Digital Markets Act, which essentially says if you are a gatekeeper, you cannot do a whole load of things. Many of the practices I was talking about before, self-preferencing, using data from competitors and so on. So I think in the tech sector, really, we kind of have what we need, and it's more about making sure that it's enforced properly. You know, as you say, these are American companies, but I don't think that's preventing the commission from trying to rein them in using these new rules. As we've seen so far, it's not necessarily easy, and the companies are pushing back quite hard. But I think in the end, we will get somewhere, and we have already seen some big changes to their business models that we wouldn't have expected before. But I think what we're saying in this manifesto is that these types of bright line rules shouldn't just be applied to the dominant tech companies, but that we should think about it as a model for the entire economy in Europe, because there are many other industries where you have a few companies that are very powerful. You know, you can take financial services, you can take transport, and we should be looking at DMA style rules that apply to companies in those industries where that doesn't apply yet, instead of having to go through these long-winded investigations that take many years and potentially don't create results. And one of the ways that we frame that is by essentially saying that where a company plays a systemic role in the economy, where a lot of consumers and a lot of businesses and a lot of workers depend on it, then we should essentially consider those companies utilities. And we should, you know, while maintaining them in private ownership, making sure that they have higher responsibilities in terms of equal treatment, non-discrimination. You know, in the tech sector, it could be things like cybersecurity and privacy. But I think we need to make sure that the scale of a company is commensurate to the responsibilities that they face.
Mm-hmm. Which is similar to what we see in banking, where banks that are come with systemic risk, as that is defined, have to follow stricter rules about capital adequacy, I think, and so on. Interesting that so basically you think that DMA is a good model and it should be applied to other areas as well. But with the DMA, I would say one of the things we've seen is there's the overlap of all these regulations, and that really opens up the field for challenges from the tech companies. And we'll see how that plays out, particularly given the difference in resources and capacity to hire lawyers from the two sides. My final question, and perhaps you will not like this question, is whether you are concerned about what sort of taking down these big tech companies means for competitiveness. I feel like we are heading in a direction where European policy will be all about competitiveness globally, and it's something that has been discussed for years now, but it seems like it's really rising in priorities. And already this sort of private sector, when it comes to technology in Europe, is somewhat lagging behind, sorry, to the startup ecosystem. So are you concerned that maybe competitiveness and competition are not mutually compatible?
So actually, I'm very glad you asked me that question, because it's an important debate to be had. And as you say, competitiveness is on the lips of everyone in Brussels these days, not least because of the Mario Draghi report that we're expecting to see soon that will set out some ideas there. Look, I think my overall response to your question would be that no, I do not think competitiveness and competition are actually in conflict with each other. You know, I don't deny that there are some issues at the moment in terms of Europe's ability to produce leading technology companies and to innovate, you know, perhaps at the same level as what we're seeing in the US, but I don't think that is because of, you know, too much competition or enforcement or too much regulation. I mean, if you look more generally at what the historical record shows us, you know, countries that enforce their competition laws strongly and that create openings for challengers tend to also be more globally competitive. So a good example of this is the US. You know, they had very ambitious antitrust cases against IBM, against AT&T, against Microsoft later. And those are credited by a lot of experts with actually creating the room for new tech companies to arise, including Apple, including Google, including others. So I think we should actually see competition enforcement as something that will strengthen Europe's competitiveness. And that's not just theoretical. You know, the reason why we have the DMA is because of how the market dominance of a few US tech companies has made it really hard for European startups to grow, to scale, because they are bought out by the dominant companies as soon as they pose a real challenge. And we're seeing a lot of that in AI right now. I mean, just look at the case of Mistral. Which hasn't been bought out, but which is kind of part of Microsoft's business empire now, or these European challenges are crushed by unfair tactics by the dominant companies who, you know, push their products down in rankings or copy their ideas. And so I think really, actually, competitiveness and competition are very much should work together in harmony, actually, and that if we get competition policy right in Europe, if we really succeed in tackling all this market concentration and dealing with monopolies, then we'll be more competitive globally and we'll have a better economy for Europeans. You know, economy that has lower prices, where workers earn higher wages, where we have more and better quality innovation. So yeah, I think it's actually I think it's a kind of imaginary paradox.
All right. Thank you, Max. I think that's all we have time for this week. Thank you so much for joining me. Don't forget to sign up to our free Tech Brief newsletter to stay on top of tech news and digital policy developments in the European Union and beyond. And don't forget to subscribe to this podcast if you like it, which is published on all your usual podcast platforms. I am Eliza Grizzi. Thank you for listening.
As part of our commitment to accuracy, inclusion, and transparency, Euractiv is part of the Trust Project.